The views expressed on the Buckmaster Radio program are not necessarily the views of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, or its sponsors.
Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster, along with my engineer-producer, John Couch, on the other side of the glass. We welcome you to the Buckmaster Show. It's Monday, June 17th, 2019. You're listening to 1030, Tucson's voice for trusted local news and talk. We have our worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com, and, of course, kvoi.com for 24/7 listening of all of our programs. The podcast available at 24/7 at buckmastershow.com. Our live line number, you're free to welcome and free and welcome to join us at 790-2040. It is our Monday political face-off day. Our team of commentators today, Bruce Ash is with us, one of two Arizona Republican National Committee persons. Jeff Rogers here. Jeff, former chair of the Pima County Democratic Party. Gentlemen, hope you had a nice day yesterday. Bruce, you posted a picture of your father, that weightlifting picture. Wasn't he a weightlifting champion?
My father was a two-time U.S. champion. He was an American record holder, and he won competitions overseas as well.
What could he press? Do you recall
his highest lift? His highest press record was 325 pounds. That was that was actually a record for a number of years because they discontinued the 220-pound class about a year after he posted that record. And it's been smashed to smithereens since then because I think it took him about another 40 or 50 years to reestablish it. But my dad was quite a strong guy, both physically and mentally, and the force of him sometimes... For better or for worse, you know, we had our had our battles together over the years. But yesterday was a great day remembering him and my wife, you know, her dad as well.
All right, Jeff, I hope you had a nice weekend as
well. I certainly did. It was beautiful outside, a little bit on the hot side, but other than that, pretty nice.
I won't tell you that I was wearing a sweatshirt yesterday morning when I was doing gardening at the house in Coronado.
Yeah, in Coronado.
You don't want to hear about
but
that.
But I'll tell you, you know, this morning it was actually, I don't want to say cool, but for a kind of mid-June morning.
Oh, this is outstanding.
We're having I mean, I can't recall in 31 years here in town where we have had what would be a normal June where the high is about 100 degrees and the low around 70.
Yeah.
I'll take that anyway.
We're not hitting those high teens like we have in past years.
We still have a ways to go, guys.
Yeah. The Monday political face-off presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing. Family owned and run since 1985, Moe specializing in custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, picture framing and hanging services and hanging systems, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and at moesgallery.com. And Bruce, you've been out of town a couple of weeks. You're over in Normandy for the 75th anniversary of D-Day. I'm sure that you've got some things to pick up now that you're back in town over at Moe's.
No, well, not yet. But I did I did some things that I wanted to do. I got sand from the beach at Dunkirk,
right,
at Utah Beach, and at Omaha Beach. And I got seashells from all of those places. So there may be something in the offing later on, a little bit of an unusual presentation piece, but there were lots of great things that I did when we were there.
We have lots of ground to cover today, Jeff and Bruce. Jeff, let's begin with the president announcing his reelection, kicking it off officially tomorrow. You know, I would think that at this stage of the game, people have made up their mind about Donald Trump. You either like the guy or you don't. I don't think there's a lot of margin for error.
No, there's not. And if I were, a Republican advisor, I would be on this president trying to get him to change some of his behavior because he's got a hardcore that's not going to leave him no matter what he does of between 41 to 44 on a really great week, maybe 45%, but that's not going to be enough to put him over the top. And he needs to figure out a way to bring in some of the few undecided people that we have left or that are convincible. And he doesn't appear to be doing that. He continues to do what I think is really sort of doubling down on his base strategy. And I don't think that's going to be enough to win this election. I think he needs to make some changes particularly in his behavior and some of his statements and maybe even in some policies if he wants to lure in some of these undecided, convincible voters.
What do you think about that strategy, Bruce Ash?
Well, I don't disagree with Jeff in terms of this going to be a hard election to repeat. There's no question about that. There's going to be a lot of people who are energized for this election that, you know, they thought they could sort of walk through 2016 and they saw what happened. But, you know, when you think about it, and we, you know, are voracious readers of the news, you know, in newspapers as well as online, the more the Democrats do in Congress to block Trump on various issues, the more people who, and I'm not including that in that 45% or so who like him a lot, you're going to get a lot of people who say, you know, I've had enough of these Democrats. They're not doing anything in Congress. And, you know, this is a guy who cares about us and we're going to vote for him. Now, I recognize Jeff probably has a good argument against that, but we've seen it happen in the past and how politicians have been able to use it for their advantage. And I think no matter what you might think of Donald Trump, he is a very skilled and intuitive campaigner, and he's got some pretty good people working for him.
Well, I think one of the problems is that it's actually quite the opposite of what Bruce just said, in that the House of Representatives, controlled by the Democrats, has passed dozens and dozens and dozens of bills that will not even get a hearing because Mitch McConnell won't bring them to the floor. And many of them are things that might pass or might result in a bipartisan agreement to change them, but they can't get hearings, they can't get heard in committee, and they can't make it to the floor of the United States Senate because the Senate has basically decided that they're just going to wait out the election and do nothing between now and then. And that's the real problem we've got. If you're going to run as somebody's a do-nothing House or Senate, it's the Senate that's blocking everything from coming to fruition.
So again, I agree with Jeff. There have been some bills that have been blocked, but those are bills that sort of very few people understand what the process they're going through is about. On the things that are of importance, where the Democrats are blocking, that's where I think the president is able to gain ground on any Democrat who might be running against him. And, you know, right now with 23 people in the race, that's a wide open kind of a proposition.
Yeah, this polling just came out in Michigan this morning that shows he now has a disapproval rate there of 57% and an approval rate of 40%. So that's pretty devastating because that's probably an essential state that Trump needs to actually be in play in 2020.
It sure is, and, you know, it's June 17th,
yes,
2019. Mm-hmm. There's lots of, this is geologic ages between now and November of 2020.
10:30, The Voice, trusted local news and talk. You're on the Face-Off with Jeff Rogers and Bruce Ash. Bruce seated to my right, Jeff to my left. Let's see if we can cover some of these other items that I've put off now for the last couple of weeks. This one, though, actually happened just last week. Florida is banning all sanctuary cities. The governor there signed into law, Jeff Rogers, one of the strictest bans in the U.S. against these so-called sanctuary cities that protect some undocumented immigrants from deportation. Why is it important to Tucson? Well, because City of Tucson voters may be asked, if it makes the ballot, we'll find out in a couple of weeks, they may be asked that Tucson become a sanctuary city. Jeff and Bruce, I think a lot of folks have no idea what this is about and what is a sanctuary city.
Well, here's the problem for the supporters of this initiative in Tucson is that in the end, they're going to ultimately hurt the people they're trying to protect. And that's because what Florida did is something that Arizona will likely do if this passes in the city of Tucson. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, what they want to do is protect people, you know, who are victims of crimes, who maybe don't want to come forward because they think that their husband will get deported in a domestic violence situation. situation, or they think they'll get deported, you know, and so lots of these things, we have already solved these at a local level. We've already solved this. This thing is a solution looking for a problem. We already have fixes in place. We have department policies with Tucson Police Department, with the City Council, that effectuate most of everything that this ordinance seeks to do. And I think if voters are educated, they'll just leave it alone and vote no on it, because I predict, and I think Bruce will agree with me, that Ducey and the state legislature will promptly pass a ban on sanctuary cities, and this thing will backfire on everyone.
What do you think, Bruce?
Again, Jeff and I are sort of in agreement here. Look, whatever happens, whether it's Florida or Arizona, this matter will be tied up in courts for years. But what we need is a solution now. And what's happening at the border, whether you're for immigration or not for immigration, I think all of us can say we are for legal immigration, and we're also for making sure that we don't have the sort of health issues and humanitarian issues that we're currently facing at the border. We need to get action from Congress, and the president's tried. He's tried to do it his own way. He's tried to work within the lines as well as color outside the lines. We're in a really, really tough situation, because there's hundreds of thousands of people who are flooding the borders. And unless we get some sort of relief on this, there's going to be continued suffering with all of these folks who have come to this country.
Well, I hate to be so agreeable, but I agree with Bruce. This is a disaster on the border right now, and it's a disaster that's totally different than what we've dealt with before. You know, 10 years ago when Bush was governor, we had numbers like this. But these were numbers of Mexican people crossing from Mexico, and they were young, healthy men who were coming here for work and economic reasons. And we could deal with that with our court system the way it's structured right now. But this is an unheard of problem in America, where you have families and you have thousands of them showing up at the border all at once, with children and whole families. And now we're seeing, I saw this morning, where the Canadian border in Maine is being inundated with this similar kinds of things. There are African families who've made the trip from Africa, and now we have some here on the southern border as well. And so this is something we've never dealt with. And I think this calls for some bipartisan solutions on both sides of the aisle. You need something kind of like we had of the Gang of Eight or something. You need some bold people who will get together and say, look, we've got to set aside our differences here and make some compromises that deal with this humanitarian crisis. And one element of that is, of course, to speed up to hire more judges who can deal with the caseloads of these people seeking asylum. Right now, they're being inundated.
All right, we're going to take our break right here. The Monday Political Face-Off, presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing. They're located at Fort Lowell and Dodge. And, of course, they're at moesgallery.com. One of our great sponsors is not only Moe, but after you've been over to Moe, how about heading up to Mona's? Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle. Yes, I was there. Had breakfast. Ann and I were there on Saturday. Ann had the blueberry pancakes with a couple of eggs. Jeff, I had those wonderful hash browns. And I asked the cook there at Mona's, northeast corner of Swan and Sun, what is the secret? What are you doing with these hash browns? Well, he starts with real potatoes.
That's a good start.
Starts with the real potatoes. He then does kind of a... Oh, he seasons the real potatoes, throws it on the grill, and then a little more seasoning. And what you're going to wind up with is a real, with your scrambled eggs, that's a delightful breakfast. And throw in what I had from the bakery section, the almond croissant.
Oh, and the blueberry muffin is really good.
And the blueberry muffin. They're doing it 6:30 every morning. They're open for breakfast special, 6:30 to 7:30. They do a breakfast special. But anyway, you can have breakfast all day. Right now, they're open for lunch. Northeast Corner, Swan and Sunrise, monasdanishbakery.com, and at buckmastershow.com. We'll be right back with Bruce Ash and Jeff Rogers. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. This is Bill Buckmaster encouraging you to fly from Tucson International Airport. When you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. A new study shows the Tucson Airport Authority's annual economic impact is $7.4 billion, with almost $1 billion of that from visitors flying into the airport. Fly Tucson, and airlines will respond with more flights, bringing more visitors, benefiting all of us. Type in TUS when you book your next flight and fly Tucson. The Regional Transportation Authority has a 35-member Citizens Advisory Committee working to identify transportation priorities for the region and will be seeking public input on those priorities before too long. These priorities will help guide development of an RTA continuation plan. The current RTA plan and half-cent excise tax will continue through June 2026. To learn more, please visit rtamobility.com.
Hey, it's Matt Russell from The Buckmaster Show.
And this is Ryan Hansen from Bon Voyage Travel.
I am so pumped to be partnering with Bon Voyage on my next culinary and cocktail cruise.
This is definitely a cruise for foodies as you experience the Mediterranean on Celebrity Cruises.
And the private excursions that your team has arranged for us? I mean, come on, an ouzo distillery tour in Greece? A food and wine day on Malta?
We'll handle everything, so all you and your guests need to do is eat, drink, and be happy.
Go to bvtravel.com/Matt Russell to learn more.
This is Moa Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing.
And this is Bill Buckmaster. For several decades now, Moe has been my go-to expert for all my framing needs and bathroom mirrors. I trust Moe for service, professionalism, and top-of-the-line quality.
Thanks, Bill. Give us a call at 795-8226 and stop by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing on the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge, right next to Copenhagen, and on the web at moesgallery.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Welcome back. It is the Monday Political Face-Off on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. I'm Bill Buckmaster. Jeff Rogers is here on the Monday Political Face-Off, and Bruce Ash is as well. So far, I've brought up two topics, and both of them have pretty much agreed. I know they're not going to agree on this. The David Brooks column that caught my eye in the New York Times a week or so ago, I was going to bring it up, Jeff, last week with you and John Munger, but just ran out of time. And the title of the piece is The Coming GOP Apocalypse, Stumbling Blind into the Age of Diversity. What were some of your thoughts on that, Jeff?
Well, I think Brooks has a lot of good points here. You will remember that we thought this was going to happen a long time ago in 2000, and as the article points out, that older people who had voted Democrat tended to switch over to Republicans, and so this didn't come about as soon as we thought it was going to happen. But he makes some very good points that the GOP is just not appealing to younger voters, but both millennials and then whatever that next generation is, the Z generation or something, that and also that the electorate is changing so much in its diversity, and that the GOP has failed to embrace that diversity. So I think he makes a lot of fine points. The destiny of the Republican Party is going to be determined by some of the things he points out about young people not being appealing to the Republican Party in any way, shape, or form. And if I were someone like Bruce, I'd certainly be, looking to what can we as Republicans do to interest these young voters as they mature.
What are those areas that you can appeal to voters on, Bruce Ash?
Well, look, when the young voters who are not yet paying taxes and aren't really in their full-time or their, permanent job sort of mode start paying taxes, we're already seeing that things flip over as they begin to have families, get married, have children. Again, that is something that changes one's direction. I won't disagree that certainly there is a groundswell of a diversity that exists out there that perhaps the Republicans haven't been as successful as the Democrats have capturing it. But we're a long time before all of these demographic shifts that, that Brooks talks about actually occurs. You know, this is like, you know, the scientist who says, you know, global climate change is going to end the world in 12 years. Well, there's a lot of stuff that happens in 12 years or doesn't happen. I think that there certainly is a greater chance here that, that the Gen Z and millennials will have more of a role than what than what they've played in the past. Times change, people change, and I think we're going to see much different voters 5 years, 10 years, 15 years. It's always been that way. This isn't something that is new and never happened before. We've seen this not just in the 21st century, but in the 20th century as well as in the 19th century. As populations age and as populations go through a series of life experiences, they start voting different than what they even thought they would be voting when they started out in their political process.
So you're saying when you get older, you become necessarily more conservative, perhaps, or what?
Well, you look at the world differently. and you know, I think that's the case here today. And certainly in today's world, that could almost change on a dime because things happen so quickly and people know what's going on immediately, like this thing in Hong Kong. You know, I mean, millions of people showed up there yesterday, even after Carrie Lam withdrew the measure on extradition to China. There's a lot more good with this particular generation or generations coming up than what Brooks sees. Brooks is seeing it, you know, from the bad side. I think there's lots of opportunities for the upside.
Well, a good quote from it that might help people understand is that it says 69% of millennials think immigration is a good thing for America. 61% think racial diversity is good for America. And these days, the Republican Party looks like a direct reaction against this ethos, against immigration, against diversity, against pluralism. Well, and I think that kind of sums it up. I mean, and the millennials are already aging into their careers right now. And what he points out here is that hasn't, their views haven't changed as they've gotten older and more career. And we don't know about this new Generation Z because they're still so young. But I think that the trend is definitely there. And if I'm a Republican, which I'm not, but if I were, I'd be concerned. And I'm concerned as well with a party that is. I think it's good for America to have both parties be strong and both parties be parties of ideas.
I agree with Jeff, except to say that. And it's a very important point. Republicans believe in legal immigration. Democrats don't care whether the immigration is legal or illegal. And that's part of the reason we have the problems today. If you're a young person and you see jobs being stolen from you, particularly if you had a high school education, and you're seeing jobs stolen from you by people who are here illegally, that is going to change your frame of mind. And I think David is a very thoughtful guy, but he's only looking at this issue though from the eyes of a Democrat.
Well, right now we've got fruit rotting on the ground in Southern California because we can't get enough people to work. The unemployment rate is very low. Fortunately, that's good for America. But there are a lot of jobs out there that aren't being done and that most Americans don't want to do. And I'll point out that Obama deported more people in 8 years than any other president in the history of the United States. He focused on the criminal element and people who were dangerous. He didn't focus on families and others that don't present a clear and present danger to America.
Let's see if we can work Sam in on the live line. Sam called us at 790-2040. Sam, what's on your mind, sir?
Well, I'm a millennial. It's kind of listening to two, I guess you could say, older gentlemen talking about my
Thank
generation
you.
Of what we think.
Mm-hmm.
The idea here is that I'm a Latino, and I've been a registered Republican since I was 18 years old. And the thing of my issue is that I kind of keep hearing the same stuff from Mr. Rogers' side of more free, more stuff. They want to keep giving us stuff, but you know, the older we get, and now that after we've gone 10 years after the recession, most of us are barely starting our families. We had to dig ourselves out of 10 years. I mean, we're in our early 30s, and most of us are barely starting our families. I think when you can say getting into our, at this point in our lives, we're barely getting to the realization of what's going on. And, I mean, that's the reality. We're a lost generation of a decade.
Yeah, great point.
Okay. Very good point, Sam.
Thank you, Sam, for listening. Sam, a millennial checking in with us on the Buckmaster Show on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Moe's wonderful gallery and fine framing at Fort Lowell and Dodge and at moesgallery.com, the proud sponsor of the Monday Political Face-Off. Jeff Rogers, thank you very much, Jeff.
My pleasure.
And Bruce, always good to see you. Welcome back from
see you next time
to Normandy. Coming up next, Steve Farley will spend the half hour with Mr. Farley talking about his run for Tucson mayor as we continue on the Buckmaster Show on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine in a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
Let's say you need an honest roofer. Where do you start? Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona has more than 3,200 accredited businesses ready to help and committed to doing things right. Next time you need a trusted mechanic, plumber, AC company, or florist, go to our website, bbb.org, or call us at 520-888-6161. Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona. We are here to help you find local companies you can trust.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year. And if you are over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
At Sierra Tucson, we see miracles of healing every day. We are honored to be an international premier treatment center right here in Southern Arizona. Our comprehensive evidence-based programs focus on addiction recovery, mood and anxiety disorders, trauma recovery, including PTSD, pain recovery, and co-occurring disorders. Learn more at sierratucson.com or call us at 800-842-4487. We work with most insurance payers.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. This time of year, it's always nice to go to the high country. See, Silver City certainly qualifies for that, being over 5,000 feet. Silver City Clay Festival is their annual celebration of all things clay in the Southwest. That festival will be getting underway July 15th through the 21st, so it'll be a great getaway. Check out southwestnewmexico.org for a complete listing of the many great places to stay and several dozen recreation opportunities in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. Tucsonans will be deciding on a new mayor this year with three Democrats, Ward 1 Councilmember Regina Romero, former state lawmaker Steve Farley, and downtown developer Randy Dorman vying for the Democratic nomination in the August primary. Republicans didn't field a candidate for mayor, although they do have, I don't want to say that they have Republicans, but there is an independent, Ed Ackerley, who will face off against the winner of the primary. Steve Farley is with me in studio. Steve, how are you?
Doing great. Always great to be here, Bill.
Thank you very much. Steve Farley served 12 years in the state legislature, first as a state representative, then as a state senator. While Mr. Farley ran unsuccessfully for Arizona governor last year, he may be best known for his leading role in the establishment of the Regional Transportation Authority in 2006, which, of course, is responsible for many major road projects and the modern streetcar. Steve Farley is the owner of Stephen Farley Design. He's well known for his mural that he created in the Broadway underpass area near downtown. It's really a gathering of historic photos from the community and turning them into tiles. Steve, when was that project? When did you do that?
Well, I was commissioned in 1997, and it's just a little over 20 years ago that we dedicated those murals.
I think I first met you when I was on the TV show when you were not only, I think it was not just about the mural project, but around the same time you were talking about transportation downtown and a streetcar and on and on.
Yep. That's something that I've been working on for a really long time, long before I was an elected official. I was working very hard on trying to make my community a better place.
So it's not like you're a newcomer, some outsider coming to the city.
Hardly. I think I've actually been in Tucson longer than any of the other people who I'm running against. So it's been a real obsession in my life to try to make my community a better place. And this is an amazing city. I just love everything about it. And I think I have the experience, especially now that I've had spent 12 years in the legislature, to be able to get folks working together in the legislature in the right direction instead of constantly defending against attacks. So that adds to what I've got as well. I think my entire political career, in fact, started around one PowerPoint slide that I saw when I was a member of a citizens group looking at the future of the 5th, 6th Street corridor here
really?
In Tucson. The PowerPoint title was Obstacles to Throughput. And the number one obstacle to throughput was pedestrians.
Mm-hmm.
And I turned around to a number of the people there in that group. Remember, people from mm-hmm. historic neighborhoods it goes through. It goes past five schools. And he said, is this really the kind of community you want to live in? Mm-hmm. And people said, no. So that they really started off this group I founded called Tucsonans for Sensible Transportation,
right,
where we're pushing for better public transit and particularly for rail transit in this community.
Mm-hmm.
And I started working politically to try to get that done just as an outside activist. And that's mm-hmm. part of how we got the RTA put together. There was 40 previous failed years of five failed tries of trying to get a regional transportation plan together.
And you went the day after that one program failed that you
right.
were pushing.
We had gone
the next day you went over to the home builders and say, okay, let's get this done.
Exactly. You know, in fact, the home builders and the car dealers spent a bunch of money to kill the plan that I had worked to get 18,000 citizen signatures to get on the ballot. People knew it's a light rail initiative, but it had neighborhood street maintenance. It had a better bus system, bikeways, sidewalks, and light rail and the downtown streetcar. And it went down 60-40 after the car dealers and the home builders spent money against it. But as you said, the next day I went over to the home builders and I said, we have to work together because otherwise we're just going to keep beating each other up and we won't get anything that's good for the community. And that started the process of former enemies reaching across their divide and coming up with a plan that worked for everybody. And then I was the lead person in the campaign to get that done, sometimes debating three times a day to be able to tell mm-hmm. people about what was in the plan and why we needed to move forward. And we won for the first time in 40 years. And that created thousands of jobs, $2.1 billion in investment in transportation during the worst recession we've ever experienced. So it's done a lot for us.
You're not only a policy wonk, I mean, you're a guy that can understand numbers, but you also have the side of your brain that is the artistic side. That's very unusual. I kind of think of myself more on the artistic side because it's very difficult for me even to balance my checkbook, but you're a numbers guy.
Yeah, I like to get both sides of my brain going.
Yeah.
In the legislature, I was the ranking member on the Senate Finance Committee and the House Ways and Means Committee for all 12 years. I'm on the Joint Legislative Budget Committee and the Appropriations Committee, so I oversaw the $10 billion state budget. And I had a reputation for on budget night, which always went in the middle of the night because they never wanted us to see what was in that budget. I was ripping it apart in detail and exposing everything that was happening in that budget and offering amendments to make it better. So I dug into those numbers, and I did a lot being able to actually gain support across the aisle in the legislature to get things done. Just on healthcare in 2013, I worked with Jan Brewer, of all people, who I disagreed with about almost everything, when she was willing to reach out and work together to expand Medicaid to 400,000 people in the state of Arizona. I mean, not a lot of people in her party wanted to support Obama's Affordable Care Act, but I was right on board. We got our caucus together, we flipped some Republicans, and we saved lives. So that thing about finding something that's best for the community and working together no matter what the politics is really what I want to bring to the mayor's race. I think that in the mayor's position, you don't have a lot of innate power. You count as a vote on the council, count towards a quorum, you set the agenda. But you've really got to be able to form coalitions and collaborate on some of the most challenging things that we face as a community. And that's vision setting, goal setting, and then finding the right people to connect and then moving forward together. Excited about that.
And you have had, and you and the year two opponents have been already to probably at least a dozen forums. There'll probably be at least another dozen. And by the way, early voting will begin, folks, about 5 weeks.
46 days, not that I'm counting or anything.
Yeah, there you go. And so what do the people at these forums, and of course some of them have specific interests, like there's one coming up, a forum about gentrification, but there's been sustainability. But what do these people share in common that come to these forums that they want for this city?
Well, you hear a lot of things. One of the things that I hear more than anything else from anybody, no matter where in the city, is we got to deal with a pothole problem.
Right.
It's in every neighborhood. Bike ride on the south side where I was going through neighborhoods at night, and the training before we went out was that you had to, when you passed a pothole, yell pothole and point to it so people wouldn't get their bikes stuck in it. And the whole night was just the soundtrack. Jeez, was pothole, pothole, pothole. Pothole. I've been riding a different bus route every week to talk with people on the bus and ask them what they would like to do if they were mayor. And people, I get a lot of interesting stories once people are over the shock of an elected official actually riding the bus.
Yeah.
They tell me some good stories that are very useful. But I hear even from the folks who are riding the bus that potholes is a number one issue for folks. And I think that's another one of those issues where there are solutions. We just have to be willing to get people together, set out what the scope of the issue is, figure out a sustainable funding source so that we don't just pay for a few at a time, we pay for the entire system long-term, so when people can look up into their neighborhood and find out when it's going to get resurfaced and then when it's going to get resurfaced the next time, so they can count on the fact that our infrastructure is going to be preserved and not simply allowed to decay.
Do you like this idea of self-taxing districts and their, self-taxing neighborhoods to try to deal with some of their own maintenance issues?
I understand why neighborhoods will want to take things into their own hands when they feel like they're not getting it, but I'm a little worried that that's something that could lead to massive inequality when you've got wealthier neighborhoods putting up the money and people for whom they don't have the money, or else there's not a lot of home ownership in that community where they will end up with worse infrastructure.
It's not new. I mean, Elm over here by the Arizona Inn has had that. I'm just wondering why this is coming up before the council now.
I still think that the city of Tucson needs to come up with a plan for everybody, and it shouldn't be left to each individual neighborhood. I mean, like, does the neighborhood have to go out there and do bids? Does the neighborhood have to figure out what standards it needs to be done to and who offers that? There's a lot of things in which this is putting a lot of work onto the neighborhoods that I think could probably be better done by the city transportation department with an overall plan using the funding that we determine that we come to together.
I would know. I had have no idea how that would even work. I mean, would it be on there that everybody in that neighborhood would pay on their tax bill?
This is a basic city service that I think the city ought to be responsible for.
Yeah,
that's where I'm coming down on this.
What other issue? You talked about sustainability, but what is the top issue that needs to, other than the potholes, it's important, I know, but what is the top issue to move this city forward?
Well, poverty is a huge issue in this community.
And one out of three people, very poor.
It's just, we have way too much poverty in Tucson, and we've got to do a multi-pronged approach to really take care of that. And that means we've got to create more jobs. That means we've got to make sure that people don't fall between the cracks and have no health care. That means we've got to really do a lot about education, which the city traditionally hasn't done a lot on, in which we can work and partner with our public schools. So we can work with job training programs, with JTEDs, with our Pima Community College, with our university, and have a much stronger partnership there. So the university can also spin off businesses, and we can avoid graduates going to other cities and have them start their businesses here so that we can have headquarters here that come right out of the gate, grow our own, and create more jobs here from people who are educated as well. Because if we don't, even though the state has primarily the focus on education, if they're not doing their job adequately, then we end up paying for it as the city. So that means if we can partner in advance, and that's one of the reasons I support Universal Preschool, that entire program. If you can invest $10,000 a year in a super high quality preschool for every kid in this community, you won't be paying $50,000 a year to incarcerate that kid when they've grown up into their 20s. And that's real savings to the community as well, not just financially, but in our ability to rise as a community together and create jobs and have the kind of place we all want to live in for long term. And you can pay for those sorts of things in creative ways. It doesn't have to be taxes. There's Salt Lake City is doing a great example using something called social impact bonds, where you, instead of raising taxes, you raise investors who invest in the success of your community. That increases the ownership of the community. And that you split the savings of not having to do all these extra social services down the line between the investors and the taxpayers, while having a community that's much more functional and is growing more successfully into the future.
Speaking with Steve Farley, 790-2040, if you would like to join us on the live line, if you have a question or comment for Mr. Farley, he would be happy to entertain that. We're going to take our break right here on the Buckmaster Show, 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. We'll hear from the people who have made this program. In many cases, these people have been legacy sponsors who've been with us since January of 2011. It's Buckmaster on a Monday. Be right back. The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year transportation plan is funded through June 2026 by a special taxing district, which is a state-established political subdivision within Pima County. The RTA plan and half-cent excise tax were voter-approved in May 2006, and the tax is collected within the district. More about RTA's Citizens Advisory Committee's efforts to develop an RTA continuation plan at rtamobility.com. Vero Amore is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com. Buckmaster Show listeners know about my love of travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. I know you value your time and money, so it makes sense to fly Tucson with nearly 60 daily nonstop flights to major hub airports. If you're flying to another airport to take a nonstop flight, you're still making a connection and spending 4 hours on the road traveling to that other airport. That's why I fly Tucson and encourage you to do the same.
Join hundreds of other Arizona businesses who have chosen to put kids first. The Corporate Tax Credit Scholarship Program's deadline is June 30th. Eligible businesses will receive a dollar-for-dollar tax credit. IBE, a school tuition organization, is ready to help. Talk to your accountant today. A one-minute application to IBE and we take care of the rest. IBE works with over 290 diverse schools, awarding 95% of all corporate donations to low-income and disabled students. Deadline, June 30th. azcorporatetax.org.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Welcome back. We're talking with Steve Farley. Steve served 12 years in the Arizona legislature, first as a state representative, then a state senator. Now he is a candidate for mayor. We were talking in the first segment, Steve Farley, that you're on the a public artist. You work in art, but you're also very much a policy wonk. And we had Mike Ortega sitting in the chair that you are now occupying on Friday. Mike, I think Mike's done a really good job as city manager.
Absolutely.
And he is a guy, a real numbers guy. And yeah, he was breaking down the budget.
Part of why I'm excited to work with him.
Yeah, I mean, he was breaking down the budget and talking about core services. That is his big deal for this next upcoming budget. And that is a budget that you would be part of if you become the mayor. I'm sure you've taken a look at this budget very carefully. What do you like about it?
Oh, that's what I like. It's focusing on the basics of what we need to really take care of here. Because we have to make sure that we've got our potholes filled, we've got our parks in good shape and well-maintained, and that we've got our public safety covered. I do think we need to have a long-term plan in which we get our number of commissioned officers and firefighters on the street up much higher than they are now, because we're lower than they've been since the early 2000s, and our population has grown. So that's something we got to work on in terms of basic services. But I think the city manager has been very good at being fiscally conservative and making sure that we're not living above our means. That being said, I think there's a lot we can do to grow the pie so we don't end up being in the situation we're too often in, where we're dividing up a shrinking pie when it comes to revenues. A lot of that, it means growing our economy. And I think there are ways that we can take advantage of some of the challenges of the 21st century and turning them into opportunities. We're the third fastest global warming city in the country, and we're going to be ground zero when really the climate change thing hits home, and it's already happening.
What can we do locally?
Well, there's a lot
to
we
mitigate
can do
that.
Because everyone's going to face this issue. If I don't see why we're still running this country on West Virginia coal and Texas oil when we should be using Arizona sunshine. We've got to really double down on our commitment to solar energy.
Could the city go as close as possible to all solar?
Absolutely, we can.
How hard would that be?
I mean, it's becoming easier by the day because solar energy is becoming a lot cheaper. For instance, I want to turn SunTran into being powered by the sun.
Mm-hmm.
You could turn our bus system into all electric buses, because now you can do electric buses at 1,000 miles a charge. If you contract with enough solar generation to be able to power the entire line, then you've got clean burning less noisy buses that are going around our streets that
could
are much
run,
nicer.
Could we run all city buildings on solar?
Absolutely,
power?
We can. And when you make that kind of a commitment to becoming a solar city, you get more businesses coming in. Apple will not move to a community where it can't get 100% solar energy to power its electrical. These bring a whole lot of other things. If we become ultimately the innovation capital of sustainability for this country, then that attracts the attention as necessary to come here. And that comes into our partnership with the University of Arizona. We've got a lot of really brilliant people over there, as you know. You've interviewed a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
If we can plug in graduate courses to solve some of our problems, look at recycling. You've got the cardboard and the glass isn't being bought by China anymore.
Right.
Turn that into an opportunity. Now we won't have to pay for the transportation to China. We can figure out a way of reusing, recycling, repurposing those products here ourselves. And if we task a graduate course to figure out how we get that done, they come up with a business model, start a business here, then we can take advantage of the business being provided by all the other cities in the country that are struggling with the same issue. And we get a reputation as the place where we solve problems creatively. And again, that's sort of my artist and numbers thing coming hand in hand. There is no problem that we can't solve. There's always a creative solution that we may not have thought of yet. And that's the kind of excitement that I want to bring to the mayor's office, because there's so many passionate, creative people here in this town.
Yeah, there are.
Just plug them in. Get the vision and go in the right direction.
Ingrid has called us at 790-2040. Steve, if you'd slip your headset on there, and we'll hear from Ingrid. Go ahead, Ingrid.
Just quickly, I'd like to add that we should conserve our oil and coal, perhaps for other things like synthetics and medication is one thing that's that petroleum is used to make. And we need to conserve some of these natural resources for emergencies. And solar energy has proven itself to be a good source. And the disposal of some of the products used for solar energy apparently are not so difficult to get rid of. They can actually be reused.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Ingrid. I think Steve Farley's probably on the same page as you on this.
Absolutely. Doing everything we can to reduce the amount of waste we produce while decreasing the amount of carbons we're burning.
It does seem a natural, Steve Farley, that we have, I think, probably the most days of sunshine of any major city in the country. There may be some places that are smaller towns that where it's sunny, maybe Yuma or somewhere, but there is really, you would think it's a natural fit that we would be the solar city of the 21st century.
It absolutely is a natural fit, but it takes the right kind of leadership and vision to bring people together and make that who we are.
How about the next forum on, what is this one? I've got a ton of forums. You've got, if people want to come out to the next one, I've got one. Let's see, is there the upcoming forum on gentrification? Is that the one that's coming up? That's Saturday, June 22nd at the El Rio Neighborhood Center. So you'll be out there with the other candidates, and I think the Ward 1 candidates as well.
Right, that's from noon to 3 on Saturday.
Noon to 3. And
then we have another East Side Town Hall that's happening, I think on Wednesday, at a church on Kolb just north of Broadway. I forgot exactly which church that's at, but it's going to be a number of East Side neighborhoods in which we're talking about that.
How about your website?
Website is steveforTucson.com, and if you like some of my ideas, you can get a whole lot more on the website, because every week I've been putting out a different idea of what we can do to make this community a better place. I've done 14 of them so far. I'm posting one every week, and we'll have 25 by the time the primary comes along.
All right, I'll have an additional question for Steve, but first I want to tell our listeners about Green Things, 3384 East River Road by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Parks, 13-acre site, home to Zocalo and all that great hand-crafted furniture from merchandise from Mexico, Latin America, and Europe. Check out Green Things, 5 shops at Zocalo Village. It's greenthingsaz.com. You know, there's an intersection I drive by on the way to work. It's a kind of notorious, I guess, now, because there's a lot of blight in the area, and it's the Grant and
Alvernon.
And Alvernon. And I see so many people, and many of them look like they are refugees, and these people, they're walking, and they look like they're looking for something to do. And it's just a shame we can't put people to do something. I was just thinking like the Civilian Conservation Corps of the 30s. What if we had a civilian corps here in the city of Tucson?
Well, there's so many people who want to serve here in so many ways. You just look at how people have responded to the call with all these asylum seekers showing up here. And when you go over to the Benedictine Monastery and you work there serving with people, Tucsonans have this huge heart, and we want to solve a problem where we see it. Grand Alvernon is actually one of those intersections I've got an idea for, in which when you've got stores closing down, if it's too rough for even Circle K to be there, you've got to focus on those issues. And we can work with the El Rio, who is looking at that Walgreens that's closed down, and turn that into a place for behavioral health, addiction treatment. We can get computers in there. We can help people with jobs. And I'd love to put some of those refugees who live in that area to work doing a giant urban farm in the parking lot of the Fry's.
Wow.
To be able to totally change the dynamic in that intersection and grow food using their indigenous techniques.
Steve Farley, thank you very much.
Thank you for being here.
Bill Buckmaster with you saying have a great afternoon.